Hello listeners, and welcome to this week's episode of The Cult Vault. As some of you may know, this month is Jehovah's Witnesses month, and we have several interviews lined up. This week, we speak to a survivor from America. As always, if you would like to support the Patreon from as little as £1 a month, you can find me at patreon.com/thecultvault. Or, if you could leave a review of the podcast, this helps so much with building awareness in the charts. There is also the Cult Vault app now available on the Google Play Store for Android only. Please download the app if you can and give us any feedback you have. It would be so appreciated. Before we get into Joe's story, I wanted to read a BBC article about the abuse allegations in the UK. It's titled Jehovah's Witnesses Sued Over Historical Sex Abuse, and it's written by Claire Jones Victoria. It says, at least 20 former Jehovah's Witnesses are suing the group over historical sexual abuse they say they suffered. The group has a policy of not punishing alleged child sex abuse unless a second person alongside the accuser has witnessed it, or an abuser confesses. It says its elders comply with child abuse reporting laws, even if there is only one witness, and always tell the police if a child is in danger. But one former elder said it had been failing to involve the authorities. Joe Vinney, who says he was abused between the ages of 9 and 13 by a distant family member who was an active Jehovah's Witness, added children were still being abused and the religious organisation was inadvertently protecting their abusers. The way that Jehovah's Witnesses handle matters within the congregation, it's a closed shop, he told the BBC. I know for a fact now that there are parents that haven't done anything about the abuse of their children by others because they don't want to bring reproach on Jehovah's name. Mr. Vinney's own daughter, Karen, was abused as a child and has since spoken out publicly. But when she left the organisation, Mr. Vinney disowned her, something he has regretted ever since. When I was an elder and a dad, I put being an elder absolutely first, he said, and that was a mistake. Mr. Vinney said he had eventually reported his own abuser to the police in 2019 after years of being too ashamed, only to be told the man had gone on to abuse other children and died in prison. What would have happened if I'd had the courage and common sense to come forward at the time, he said. Thomas Beale, a solicitor representing some of the former members, said they had decided to seek compensation after asking the group for an apology only to find it denying what has happened or refusing to engage. Those taking the legal action say the organisation is vicariously liable for the abuse they say they have suffered. Some claim it is negligent. One woman, named Emma, which is not her real name, said after she had been abused, she had been visited by elders who had repeated scripture about why we should keep it in-house, not follow the laws of the land. And she had been asked to recount explicit details with the elders, glaring at me, she says. Several former members have also told BBC News that they were made to discuss their allegations with elders at a judicial committee, while their alleged abuser sat next to them. Emma's abuser was jailed for 2 years, but she said following his release he had been welcomed back into the organisation. A Jehovah's Witnesses spokesman said the only way that a child abuser can gain access to children in a religious organisation like ours, which does not have any programmes that separate children from their parents, is through parents themselves. He said that for decades the organisation has educated parents about the dangers of child abuse and how they can protect their children, and parents and victims were informed that they had the right to report the matter to the authorities. If a congregant has been guilty of child sexual abuse, our elders inform parents with minors so that they can take measures to protect their children, he added. So now that we have an idea of the situation over here in the UK surrounding the allegations against members of the Jehovah's Witness religion, here is Joe, over in America, with his story on exiting the Jehovah's Witnesses.
So, I've been a Jehovah's Witness, or as they say, in the truth, my entire life. I had been having doubts about the religion for a lot of years, and towards the end of 2019, I kind of finally realized that not everything they were saying was true. And then later my wife kind of came to the same conclusion. We have not been attending their meetings or anything for a couple of months now. I want to help my family come to the same conclusion as that. It's not easy. But at the very least, I can hope I get to the point where they don't shun me. We'll see what happens. This is actually my first time talking about Jehovah's Witnesses publicly like this. So I'm excited and, well, thank you for having me.
Oh, Joe, I'm really excited to listen more to your story. Whereabouts in the world are you talking to us from?
I live in Wisconsin, okay. America.
Because I've just finished interviewing a lady in Canada, and I'm interviewing a young man from Wales in the UK next week as well. So I'm really interested to see how similar or different your experiences are as Jehovah's Witnesses from different parts of the world. And you mentioned in your notes that you come from a long line of Jehovah's Witnesses. Is that right?
Yeah. So on my mom's side, it goes all the way back to my grandparents. My dad's side is just my dad. But yeah, so pretty much all of my family, at least that I'm particularly close to, are Jehovah's Witnesses.
Okay, and so if you were to have this conversation with your family, it's probably going to be quite a difficult one.
Oh, yeah. So if I try to tell them at all in any way, shape, or form, I don't believe in Jehovah's Witnesses anymore, it would be bad. Because they frankly wouldn't believe me. Best case is they just think I'm crazy and, you know, don't really want to spend as much time with me. Worst case is they would just straight up shun me and just never speak to me again because I am not part of the religion or I'm not taking it seriously.
Right, okay. And do you think that there is a cause for you to be disfellowshipped at all?
Oh, yeah. Actually, by doing this podcast is something to get me disfellowshipped. And that they consider it apostasy, which is, in theory, anything that's apostate would be like spreading lies or half-truths about Jehovah's Witnesses. And I'm sure there are people that do that. But even saying anything that's true about Jehovah's Witnesses that doesn't paint them in a good light is also considered apostasy, right? So, I mean, like, anything could be considered apostate. Like, if the news prints an article that's good about Jehovah's Witnesses, they'll share it and talk about how great that is. But then if next week they post something bad, they'll be like, oh, that's apostate news. Satan controls it. Don't read that. Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So you mentioned that your father on his side, it started with him. So did he meet your wife and then join the church? How did that happen?
So he moved away from his parents' house.
Right.
And he happened to take a job with a person who was a Jehovah's Witness. Actually, the whole company was run by Jehovah's Witnesses, so he was kind of outnumbered. And, you know, he moved to a totally new town, had no friends other than the people he worked with, and eventually just converted to the religion.
Okay. And when you were growing up, what type of school did you attend? Was it a regular school or was it a specifically religious based?
So I was actually homeschooled.
Okay.
I went to kindergarten at public school, but it was kind of a rough school, and I would get like beaten up on the bus. So my mom had me stop going to that and just taught me at home. I've got a couple of sisters, and they were all homeschooled as well. Once I reached high school, I took a public school, but I took it over the internet, so I was still at home all the time. It was kind of funny because I was pretty sheltered, obviously, growing up. And like one of the things I think that's kind of funny, like when I was in 10th grade, I had to go take a test at the library, and there were other 10th graders there. And like two of them went outside and smoked, and I went and told the librarian on them because, like, I don't know. It's like, you know, in 10th grade, I'm tattling on them. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I suppose that's just what you were used to, though, at that time.
Right. Yeah, I thought that was the thing to do.
So your sisters, how many of you are there in total?
I've got three sisters. They're all younger than me. They are all Jehovah's Witnesses as well.
And have they expressed any doubts around the religion to you at all?
No, none at all. Okay. I've been trying to slowly like drop little things. Like, I was at one of their houses the other day. And I said, oh, yeah, I've been watching that, you know, that's what's been going on in the UK where they're trying witnesses for all the sex abuse. Just kind of said that. And, I mean, you would have thought I said I just murdered a baby or something, like just dead silent for like a solid minute afterwards. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to say things, but.
So for you growing up, it was you and your three younger sisters, you're homeschooled. What was your timeline like around your activities with the church? How many services a week did you attend, and how much of your time did it take up when you were growing up?
So when I was growing up, back then we had three meetings every week. And so we would go to those. When I was a kid, it was kind of on and off. We weren't always like super regular attending. And then when I got, well, I shouldn't say when I was a kid. When I was like a young teenager, then when we got older, we started becoming more regular again. When I was a child, we were extremely regular. I can remember like some of my earliest memories are, you know, you'd go out to a door out in our ministry, and if you're the kid, your job is to press the doorbell. And, you know, that's like, you feel so cool because you're the doorbell presser, you know? But so we would go to the meetings every week. Sometimes we would have a family study at home. Everyone was supposed to. We weren't super regular about that. And then we'd go out in the ministries usually on the weekends.
So a lot of your time growing up was devoted to activities within the church and services.
Oh, definitely.
And did you make friends with any similar aged people within your congregation? Were you able to socialize at all with any other children?
So for a long, very long time, there were nobody else my age in our congregation. I should say there wasn't anybody, but like I was homeschooled and they all went to public school, and so there was no overlap really. So I didn't really have a lot of friends for a long time. It's been a couple of years without really having many friends as a child or as a teenager. When I got older, I finally connected with some more people. Again, all Jehovah's Witnesses. But for a long time, they're not really, no.
Okay. And I know that the worship spaces that are used by the Jehovah's Witnesses are called the Kingdom Hall.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this is universal as well.
Yeah.
So describe to me what your specific Kingdom Hall looked like.
So I've actually been to a few different Kingdom Halls. So each Kingdom Hall is like assigned to a specific area. Like if you live on this street, you go to this Kingdom Hall. The one I grew up in was pretty small. And none of them, none of them really look like a church. It looks more like, you know, maybe a cross between a classroom and a DMV. So pretty plain, very practical, functional. There's a big auditorium, there's a library, and there's what they call the elders room, which is where you go if you're in trouble. So you never want to have to go into the elders room. One of them I went to had a basement. So they had like another congregation that could meet in the basement while we were meeting upstairs. The one I grew up in was considered small. There was about 50 baptized Jehovah's Witnesses that regularly attended. And then the last one I attended was pretty large. There was over 120.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I live in a pretty big city now. So, and then each Kingdom Hall has what they call the elder body. It's just a group of men who, and it's always men, but who take care of the Kingdom Hall and like oversee everyone in it.
Okay. And in the library, is that all approved texts that are available to read? Okay, so everything within the library is kind of, it's controlled.
Yeah. It's all Jehovah's Witness books and magazines. And I think there was like a few the one I grew up in, there was a few that were not published by Jehovah's Witnesses, but they were referenced by them regularly. Right. And like a few other translations of the Bible. But like you couldn't just like bring a book in and put it in.
And how regularly are you encouraged to read scripture or any of this literature you can find in that library?
So the scripture, you're supposed to read the Bible every single day. And then everything else, you're always supposed to read it as much as it came out, right? So, you know, back in the day, they had four magazines come out a month. Now they only do, I think, one a month. And you're supposed to read all those magazines.
Right.
Whenever they come out with new books, you should read the books. Now they have, like, the videos, and you're You're supposed to watch all the videos as they come out. Yeah, you're supposed to try to keep up with all of it.
Okay, and what types of literature would be included in these magazines when they are released?
It's usually like Bible commentary, policies, talks about their doctrine. It's kind of, and they even admit this, but it's kind of the same thing over and over and over.
Right, okay. So there's no like, oh, over in this part of the world, a group of JWs did this. So it's not like a kind of sharing of what the work that's going on across the world.
So in the 90s, they did that a lot that okay. I remember. Like they would say like, oh, we're going to look at this country today and what the witnesses there are doing. But now it's more just, here's this scripture and here's how you should apply this.
Okay, okay. And it's my understanding, I could be wrong when I say this, but from my interview with Black Sheep last week, she told me that it is expected of men within, well, young boys growing up into men in the congregation to take on some church responsibilities at a certain age. And I believe that you actually did do this.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 2008, actually, I finished high school and I kind of had the goal pretty much my entire life. The expectation was that I was going to be a go to Bethel, which is our world headquarters, and work there, or I should say volunteer because it's not paid. And then also work towards becoming a circuit overseer, which is somebody who oversees a group of congregations. So when I finished high school, I also signed up for the RBC. That's since been disbanded. But at the time, it was a way for young people to go out and work on Kingdom Halls. And the theory was they would teach you how to do a trade. Like, you know, you'd go out and you'd do all the, they'd show you how to do like the masonry for a Kingdom Hall.
Oh, right. Okay. So you're working towards building these actual properties.
Yeah. Yeah. Building them and remodeling them. I did a lot of that. They never did teach me any sort of trade. It was just ended up being a bunch of labor, but you know, that's how it is.
Free labor as well.
Yeah. Free labor. Right. Yeah. So that's what, I did that instead of college, but you know, so I did start pioneering at that time, and that just meant full-time, 70 hours a month, I should say. I was going out in our ministry, knocking on people's doors. To become a circuit overseer, there was a school I had to go to, but I couldn't go to that until I was 25. But right. I could apply for Bethel right away, so I did. I applied for Bethel to work there, and then they didn't accept me because some of the music I listened to, they took exception of. And that was really hard on me. Like, I really, really felt bad. Like, how could I overlook something like my music, and now I can't do this thing I've wanted to do my entire life? So it kind of made me more determined to try to be the absolute best Christian I could be. Like, I wanted to be the I don't know what you'd call it, the model Jehovah's Witness, you know what I mean?
Okay. And what, can you give us some examples of that music?
Blue Oyster Cult, I think, was the one they specifically took issue with. I also listened to some stuff like punk rock kind of stuff, like NoFX was another band I liked. I don't think I brought that one up, but they definitely wouldn't have approved of that band. Which I don't know, in retrospect, like, especially like Blue Oyster Cult, I think that's pretty tame. I don't know why that was such an issue, but I guess that's considered heavy metal by some people.
And so is, along with the library of books, is there also a library of pre-approved music for Jehovah's Witnesses to listen to?
Actually, yeah, nowadays there is. They make all kinds of music. And they don't say like you can't listen to other music, but they talk a lot about how, like, you know, there's dangerous music, there's bad music, it's going to, like, put bad thoughts in your head or whatever. But then they talk about the good music that they produce. So it's kind of implied you should really listen to the okay. official music as much as possible.
Okay. And is that music ever present when you get together as a congregation?
Yeah. So every meeting we have three songs. We sing to start the meeting, in the middle of the meeting, and then to end it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think prompted you to want to go to Bethel so eagerly and have this extra responsibility and be a perfect Christian?
Well, it was the truth. I mean, really, my entire life I was told this is it. This is what's real. You know, this is what matters. And so if that's what matters, you know, that's what I want to spend my life doing. I didn't really see any value in doing anything else.
So is when they wouldn't accept you because of your music, what was the next step for you?
So I, like I said, I really tried hard to like be better after that. And they appointed me as a ministerial servant in my congregation. And so what that means, it's not an elder, but it's like someone who's like on their way to becoming an elder later. And they have some duties within the congregation. So like I would take the lead out in our ministry. I prepared and delivered a lot of talks. And then like whenever there was not whenever, but sometimes when there was a shepherding visit, which is where they'd, you know, sit down and talk to people in the congregation. Sometimes I'd go with on those. It kept me very, very busy at our meetings. Like sometimes I would be like operating our sound system and running microphones to people, and doing 1 to 3 talks each meeting and offering a prayer at some point during the meeting. So our meetings became much less sitting down and listening and me just running around trying to keep up.
Okay. And how much time outside of the church did you have to dedicate to prepare for these sessions?
At this point in my life, it's probably in 2010, all of my time, really, because I was doing so much that, like every morning I would go out in our ministry, right? Sometimes throughout the afternoon too. And then when I'd get done with that, I'd start working on talks. That would usually take me at least a couple hours per talk throughout the week, right, to prepare for the meeting. Then I would go to work, because none of this was paid, obviously, so I had to work to support myself. So I worked at McDonald's, and I worked long shifts there. So I'd work like 10 to 12 hours, and I'd be getting home after midnight usually. And then I would sleep for a few hours and get up the next morning and go back out in our ministry.
Wow.
So it was all of my time.
And did you ever find yourself given the same speech twice, or did you always try and make it so that your talks were always different?
I tried to keep them interesting. So they have what's called a public talk, which is when you're assigned one specific talk and you go to different congregations to deliver it. I was assigned a talk, but I burnt out before I could actually get to the point of giving one. So I'd usually give different talks. Usually it'd be like the Bible highlights, which is you talk about a special section or a specific part of scripture and have people comment on it, or different talks on different topics. I don't know. I had fun giving them. I tried to keep them interesting. Like I know one time, I don't even remember what the topic was, something about the Bible. And I walked up on stage with like 6 different Bible translations all stacked up with me and went through them one by one talking about them. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. It was just exhausting.
It sounds like from this, you would have gained a lot of transferable skills though, in terms of organization. You know, I'm sure that when you became employed in a different line of work later on, you would have gained something from doing this that would
be a good part of
a team.
So it was a couple of years I did all that, and then I burnt myself out and I couldn't keep up with it anymore, so I was just a regular plain old Jehovah's Witness. I got a sales job. And I was really dang good at sales. I mean, like you said, all the skills I learned, you know, as doing that stuff really transferred over to that pretty well.
Okay. And once you got your job at McDonald's, and you were a bit more financially independent, were you expected to donate any of your wages to the Jehovah's Witnesses?
So it's not a expectation per se, but they do constantly talk about how you should give to Jehovah. You know what I mean? Like, even if it's only a little bit, like they talk about, I think Jesus said that there was like an illustration of a woman that put in 2 coins that were worth almost nothing. And they talked about that all the time. Like, you know, just give something if that's all you can give.
Yeah. So Black Sheep mentioned, she said that it was a widow and it was the last 2 coins she had left.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So I think that's another universal thing that is used across the religion, which is interesting, I think.
Yeah.
I guess if everybody's being trained at Bethel, then that's kind of how everything moves downwards throughout the world. Maybe, I don't really know, because obviously I was never part of the religion, but this is just me speculating.
Yeah.
So You mentioned before something about shepherding. Just explain what that is for those of us that that aren't aware of some of the terminology from within the religion.
Sure. So shepherding was, you're supposed to, I think it was twice a year, the elders should sit down with you and just kind of check in on you, ask you how you're doing. It wasn't like you were in trouble or anything, not for a shepherding visit, but just to check in on you, you know, kind of thing. Usually you would have an elder assigned to you, and so that one would meet with you with someone else, maybe read some scriptures about something. If you're not, you know, an appointed man, you know, you don't have any responsibilities, you know, they talk about why that is and how they could help you get there, things like that.
Okay, and do you think that you might be on the list for one of these visits if you were, like yourself, starting to withdraw from the religion?
I'm definitely on a list. I get a text message every month on the first of the month from an elder saying, hey, you know, we want to talk to you, see how you're doing. I've just been ignoring them.
Right, okay. Black Sheep also mentioned in her interview when I spoke to her that the boys that were working to become elders, they were given the responsibility of keeping an eye on the rest of the congregation. Did you ever find yourself reporting back information that you'd learned within the congregation to the elders of your church?
Oh, for sure. Honestly, I think everybody kind of had that responsibility. There were a lot of times I did that, even like a year ago, a friend of mine told me something in confidence and I went and told the elders. And I honestly feel bad about that now, but at the time it was like, so they had this idea called a serious sin. So if you're committing a serious sin and you don't say anything about it to the elders, God will literally kill you at Armageddon. But then if I, for example, know somebody else was committing a serious sin and I didn't tell the elders, God would also kill me at Armageddon because I would be considered to also be part of that sin. So there's a big push, really, to get people to try to turn people in.
Okay, so you're not doing it to be petty or to just be a snitch. You're doing it because you believe that there is a chance that you won't be a part of the heaven on earth after Armageddon?
Yeah, called paradise, essentially heaven on earth.
So it's a genuine worry that if you don't report these things, you're going to be left behind when Armageddon happens.
Yeah, and not even just be left behind, be like killed. Because so when Armageddon comes, the idea is that anyone who's not a Jehovah's Witness, for the most part, that God will kill them because they're not faithful to him. So, and then Armageddon, as you know, they say, will come any single day now. So that could come next week. So it's like, if you know something's going on, and you don't say anything, next week God could kill you.
Okay. So do you feel like you're always living in a, or were living in a state of constant worry about all of the actions and things that you were doing outside of the church, whether that be a type of film you might be watching?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's almost, and I never realized how weird this was until now I have some more perspective. You never really get to be yourself around other Jehovah's Witnesses because you never know if you might say something that could offend someone. I like to play video games. One of the games I like is called Overwatch. It's a silly game where you shoot other people. It's a shooter, right? But I'd be really, really careful to not to say that around other Jehovah's Witnesses because if one of them heard me talk about it, they could be very upset about that it was like a violent, horrible video game and I could get in trouble for it, even though I didn't think there's anything wrong with it. So I had to be super, super careful. Actually, one example I'll give you in particular, I used to love paintball. I'd go play all the time. And then once I was at a gas station, I was wearing my paintball gear and I just so happened to bump into an elder. And very next meeting, I got taken back to the elders' room, and they told me paintball was glorifying violence, and I can't do that anymore. So I stopped. But it's just stuff like that. You know, you really can't let other witnesses know what you're actually into unless you really know them.
And do you think that there are things that people are doing in their lives that they are keeping from the congregation?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Everybody is. I mean, literally everybody is. Like I mentioned, video games I play, I don't talk about. I know other people who watch movies and they don't talk about them. Harry Potter's a big one that like is super horrible, bad. And I know tons of people that like Harry Potter, and it never bothered me. I thought it was fine. I never said anything about it, but that's one of those things where if it gets to the wrong person, that could really get you in trouble.
Black Sheep also mentioned that, you know, you would never watch Harry Potter, which is just really, again, you know, she's in a different part of the world. And this is another theme that seems to be, you know, similar to what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you talked about the elders' room and how you didn't want to be taken back there.
Yeah.
But you've been there. It sounds a bit like the teacher's lounge in school. Like, it's like off limits and you don't really know what's in there. And then you go in there one day and you're like, I don't want to be here. This is not a fun place. And were you ever, is the elders' room where they would keep this secret book?
So as far as I know, the book, The Shepherd, the Flock of God, they would keep it at home or in their bookcase,
right?
Or the briefcase, I should say. I don't think they kept a copy at the Kingdom Hall because they didn't. They really wanted to make sure nobody accidentally got a hold of it.
Did the elders of your congregation have any influence or say in yours or any of your family members' lives outside of the church?
So there is no outside if you're a Jehovah's Witness. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, you are one all the time, and everything you do has to be resembling a Jehovah's Witness.
Okay.
So yeah, I would say they definitely did have influence all the time.
So if you were to go and apply for your job at McDonald's, is this something you're supposed to discuss with the elders?
It's always, I'm trying to think of how they would phrase it. It's been a little while since I thought about this. So it's good to get advice from people. You know, if I went and got a job and didn't ask anyone about it, I wouldn't be like in trouble, but they would definitely encourage me to talk to somebody about that ahead of time and say, hey, I'm thinking about getting this job. You know, this is why. And if my reasons for it weren't because I want to do more for Jehovah, they would kind of be like, well, you know, do you just want more money? And if you just want more money is bad. Okay. As a Jehovah's Witness, you have to do things for Jehovah, not for yourself.
Okay. In my previous interview, I spoke to Black Sheep a lot about how it's very patriarchal within the Jehovah's Witnesses. You mentioned before that all the elders are always men. I'm just wondering if there were any LGBTQIA members within your congregation that you knew of that couldn't be themselves within the church because of the rules around homosexuality.
Yeah, so there was one friend I had who I found out later that he was gay.
Okay.
And I feel really bad about this, but he moved in with his boyfriend, and I wasn't happy for him. I thought he was doing something horrible choosing to be gay.
Right.
I was very homophobic and very ignorant, and I shunned him. Like, I just completely cut him out of my life, even though he was just doing something great for himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure there are people suppressing who they are within Jehovah's Witnesses, but if you don't suppress it, you can't be a Jehovah's Witness.
Right. And have you reached out to this person since to speak to them about everything?
Well, I don't even have his phone number anymore. That was a long time ago.
I think sometimes these things, they stick with you, don't they? When you're struggling to sleep at night and then your brain's like, what awful things can I think about?
That time
I waved at that person that wasn't who I thought it was.
Oh, and my gosh, yes.
That time that I told on my friend for being gay. So it's a difficult one, that. It is hard.
Yeah.
But there are also things that you have done that people might tell on you for. And one of them is sharing an apartment with another person. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. So this is actually kind of, so it was my best friend split our apartment with us for a while. And we had to be very careful that nobody found out about that because my wife obviously lives here with us. And for a man and a woman to be in an apartment together is like really, really, really frowned upon. I actually had a friend in our congregation who did something similar. They had one of their friends move in and the elders told him, like, he needs to get out of there. Like, that's not okay. So we just very, very carefully never mentioned that he was living with us. And we both went to separate congregations. That way it would never look like, we'd show up at the same time or anything. But yeah, that could have, had we found out about that, we could have gotten in big trouble for that.
So your roommate who moved in was also another Jehovah's Witness?
Correct.
Okay. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
If anybody was to find out, is that also grounds to be disfellowshipped?
So I don't think you could get disfellowshipped for that per se, not for that strictly. Now, and this is where it starts getting really fuzzy because the rules around disfellowshipping are not very straightforward. So if they knew he was living with us, and the elders told us he couldn't anymore, and we just ignored that, don't think we could get disfellowship for that particular. If they thought we had a bad attitude about it, on top of that would be considered brazen conduct, and that could be disfellowshipping. Or if somebody thought that, when I was at work, him and my wife were having sex and said that to the elders, then it could be a disfellowshipping thing. And I think there was an article, I want to say in a Watchtower a while back, that talked about how even if technically you didn't have sex, if it looks like you are, like if you're spending time alone with somebody, you can be assumed that you had sex. Like if a man and a woman spend the night in a house alone together, that could be considered sexual even if nothing happened. Right. So depending on how things went, it could be a disfellowshipping thing.
And is the Watchtower the name of the magazine you mentioned before?
Oh, yeah. Watchtower is that's like the primary magazine. There's also Awake magazine. Nowadays, they're kind of the same thing. But they used to be the Awake back in the day would have more general interest articles, and the Watchtower would have more scriptural-focused articles.
Okay. And are these the things that you're giving away to people when you go pioneering?
Yeah. So we would do the magazines. Back when I was pioneering, we had something called a magazine route. So that would be, you would get people who would, you deliver the magazines to twice a month, every month. Nowadays, you don't really do a magazine route. It's all about converting people. It's not even about education anymore. You want to get out there, get people studying with the Bible. And then if they aren't actively becoming a Jehovah's Witness, you drop them and move on to somebody else.
Okay. And did your wife ever do any pioneering with the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yeah. So when we were dating, she was pioneering. And then she developed some health problems and had to stop for a while. She attempted to start pioneering again. And a long story short, an elder in our congregation did not like my wife.
Right.
For very silly reasons, and was extremely, extremely unkind to her for trying to reach out to Pioneer, and she wasn't able to.
Okay, do you think that that has a lot to do with her decision to distance herself from the religion?
Absolutely, and I don't, and me too, to be completely honest. I won't go into too many details here, mm-hmm. but she attempted suicide because of what this elder did to her.
Okay.
And then that really, afterwards, I talked to the elders about this stuff and they'd be like, oh, you just have to forgive him, right? Either talk to him about it or forgive him. And I tried to talk to him about it and he didn't even care. And they're just like, yeah, you just have to forgive him and move on. Obviously you can't just move on from your wife almost dying. And so that was, we tried for a long time after that to keep being witnesses, but I mean, that event, I mean, it just changed everything.
Well, I hope she's doing okay now. That's obviously
She's doing a lot better now.
Good, good. That's an awful thing to have happened to her. And when you spoke about being, you know, burnt out before from doing so much physical stuff, it sounds as though the witnesses themselves have given you spiritual burnout as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. Right now, I'm not even really interested in God, to be completely honest.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I'm an atheist at this point, but someday I'll take a look at religion again, but right now I just don't want anything to do with it.
Okay. Okay. So your wife's doing okay, which is good news. Obviously this should never have happened to her in the first place. She was in a place where she was supposed to be looked after and taken care of.
Yeah.
What things do you do now that you've distanced yourselves from the church that can bring you some more peaceful experiences outside of the religion?
Well, we're trying to make new friends. I'm not good at making friends, so it hasn't been easy, but I'm trying. The coronavirus has kind of messed everything up because we haven't really been able to go out and do stuff.
Yeah.
But even just like this morning, you know, I slept in. And then I didn't feel bad because, you know, it's Sunday and I'm not going to meeting, or, you know, Friday night I'll stay up late and I don't feel guilty about that because, oh man, next day, Saturday, I got to go out and service, but I'm staying up too late on Friday night. Well, now I don't feel guilty about that. Even just things like that are, I mean, you kind of take it for granted as a witness, but there's a lot of guilt all the time. And just not feeling that all the time has been, for both of us, has been incredible.
Good, good. That's good. That's wonderful news, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Even on top of all of the COVID stuff, at least you haven't had to think about where your priorities lie with the religion, and I'm sure all the online meetings that they are holding or however things are running over there, which is really good news. And I'm just wondering how your wife became involved. Are her parents Jehovah's Witnesses as well?
Yeah, so my wife, she actually has a way more interesting story than I do.
Right.
But her family goes all the way back to when the religion started. I mean,
wow, okay.
Yeah, they've been a part of it forever. And so she's kind of putting aside a whole lot of family tradition right now.
Perhaps that's why the elder didn't like her, because people can be threatened by things like that.
Who knows? I have no idea.
Or maybe he just fancied her, and, you know, what can you maybe do about that?
I have no idea. So, yeah, it was just a stupid situation.
But you met together in your congregation.
Yeah. So this was when I moved out of the hall I grew up in. I moved to a city because I wanted to try to – there was forming a group for a foreign language group for – gosh, what language was it for now? Hmong.
Okay.
And so I moved to go participate in that. And then I never learned Hmong. That's way too complicated. But I moved in the same congregation that, you know, my now wife went to. And we just kind of started hanging out, and that was that.
Are you chaperoned on your first date?
Oh, yeah. So Jehovah's Witnesses are not allowed any sexual contact at all, and minimal physical contact when they're dating. So yeah, we always had to be chaperoned. Anytime we were together, we had to find somebody else to go with us. So there were times where we wanted to go on a date, but we couldn't find anyone to go with us, and so we just couldn't.
That
kind of stunk. And then, like, when we were at the Kingdom Hall, like, we weren't allowed to hold hands, we weren't allowed to sit next to each other. Because that would be like, the reason they gave us was that we could make other people feel bad. Which I don't really understand that, but so we didn't, you know, we obeyed. And it's also the other thing that's weird with Jehovah's Witnesses and dating. You have to be 100% committed to marriage from the beginning. So the common advice that I've been given is if you aren't ready to start a family with children, you shouldn't even be dating in the first place.
Right.
And that leads to some pretty bad stuff. Like there was actually another girl I was dating before my wife, and we were just a terrible match. I mean, we fought all the time. We had nothing in common, but we still talked about how in a few months we were going to get engaged and then we were going to get married because, you know, that was just what we were supposed to do. And I'm really glad we didn't do that because that would have been awful.
Do you think that does happen though within the
church? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think there's people coupled up that just aren't right for each other?
So there's actually, yes, there is, but also it's kind of a bad thing. Like there was a woman I know who, and her husband wasn't a Jehovah's Witness, but once you're married, you're supposed to stay married forever. So even if it's a bad matchup, that's it. You're in the marriage.
Okay.
And this man, he would legitimately like beat her and just constantly cheated on her, but she never wanted to leave him because that could like look bad as a Jehovah's Witness. And so she stuck through it for years. And that is sadly not uncommon. In that particular case, he wasn't a witness, but there are plenty of cases where they're both witnesses and that happens. And there's just very, even if you legitimately, the only reason you can get divorced is if somebody cheats on the other person. Like legitimately beating them is not a reason for divorce in Jehovah's Witnesses. So it leads to some very bad family arrangements.
Right, okay. And so you and your wife, obviously it's so great that you have each other because you're being supportive enough to distance yourself whilst your wife does the same. And it's nice that you obviously still enjoy each other's company and have a lot in common outside of the church. How fantastic is that? Especially when you can't go on dates and get to know each other properly. You can't hold hands. You don't even know if you'd like the way the person chews their food or the way that they like leave socks around the house or whatever. So it's really, really lovely that you're both so supportive of each other outside of the church.
It worked out really well. I'm very thankful that I have a great wife.
That's lovely and wholesome. That makes me feel better about the situations that some other people find themselves in. So you also mentioned something about when you were traveling for your congregation as well, and it actually ended up costing you quite a bit of money.
Yeah. So there is, so whenever we go out in the ministry, right, that's whoever's doing it has to pay for that. So all the gas, the wear and tear in the car, the meals, we all paid for that. In addition, they have three times a year, they have conventions and assemblies. And that's usually a couple hours drive away and a hotel stay. And then you have to eat out. And you have to pay for all that yourself. And that's a couple times every year. As well as taking, vacation time from work. That's what you have to use it for, is to go to conventions and assemblies. It's especially tough because, if you're a full-time pioneer, obviously you're not working a whole lot. And college is like very frowned upon for Jehovah's Witnesses. So you're probably not working a high paying job to begin with. So it becomes a pretty big financial strain just trying to keep up with everything.
Okay. And so it's my understanding that the men are expected to take up some kind of trade and the women are expected to work in menial jobs, that take up as little time as possible, such as a cleaning job. I don't know if that's the same way you are, but that was my understanding from Black Sheep's interview last week.
I think it's a little different here than maybe,
right?
Because ideally you don't go to college at all or learn any sort of trade. You just go out and start pioneering right away, which is what I did. If you do go to college, I know men and women within Jehovah's Witnesses do go to not even college, trade school is what we'd call it here. I know it's different out there. It's a different term.
Right.
But just for like a trade, something to support yourself and that's it. Never a 4-year program, never something that involved. And I know a lot of people who are window washers and cleaners. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's a lot of hard work to do that. But it seems like that is kind of the go-to Jehovah's Witness job.
Yeah, this is similar to what she mentioned. She said, it's kind of a job that you can go and earn enough money to get by because you don't need wealth. And it's a job that you can do for a few hours a week and then kind of leave at the doorstep, because then the rest of your time is obviously given to Jehovah.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Okay. And how do the elders of your congregation or other Jehovah's Witnesses in particular deal with opposition of the religion?
So they kind of don't deal with it, to be honest. I kind of explained a little bit how apostate works, is that term. So any opposition is just called apostate. And as a witness, you're not supposed to look at that. You're not supposed to consider it. You're not supposed to talk to opposers. And our literature speaks very, very, very poorly of anyone who opposes Jehovah's Witnesses, without even taking into effect of what they're saying is true or not. Like, it'll say things like they're evil, they're liars, they're slanderers, they're demon possessed. I mean, like, all this crazy stuff. And we're not even supposed to acknowledge their existence. It's kind of crazy.
Okay, and how do you think the news of abuse over here in the UK is affecting the way that the elders are running their congregations at the moment?
I don't think it is, that, to be honest. For the most part, so now, like, for me, when I heard about that, that was like, oh my God, what is going on? And my wife was the same way. And actually, I have another friend now who was a Jehovah's Witness. The same thing. He heard about that, and he's like, "What is even going on?" Most witnesses, if they are aware of that, just assume it's exaggerated or untrue without, you know, actually even looking into it. Last year, we had a watchtower that talked about child abuse, and the brunt of the message was, "It's all okay. We have it all taken care of." But actually, it didn't even say anything to address the actual issues, namely that elders don't contact the police when children are being raped in their congregation. And they have, even internally, unless there was another witness to the rape, they don't act on it, which makes no sense at all. I don't know why your first action in any of that wouldn't be to get in touch with the police. Well, their fix for it was, now they don't tell people not to call the police anymore, which is not a fix at all in the slightest. It's just very frustrating.
Do you know of any incidents that were sort of hushed up within your congregation specifically?
Yeah. So my wife was, this was at school. Somebody was like, molesting her at school.
Right.
And an elder told her not to say anything about it because that would make witnesses look bad. And then there was a man who was actually grooming my sister for a while. And then the elder said they kind of took care of it, and that was kind of that, and nothing really came of it.
This is very, very similar to a Black Sheep in her interview, where she talked about abuse. And she reported it to the elders, and they took her to one side, and they basically interrogated her and wanted to know if she'd told the police. And she thought that she was going to get justice, and, you know, her abuser was going to be called out. And they basically just said, you know, Jehovah will deliver his punishment if what you're saying is true, which we don't think it is, because we believe his story that it was consensual. Which is absolutely gut-wrenching. I can't imagine how that must feel. You know, it sounds like your wife went through something this similar as well. And so what grounds are there for us to dismiss what's happening over here in the UK? How do people expect us to believe that these things aren't happening if I've already spoken to two people in less than a week who have personal reports that these things have actually happened? It worries me, because you just don't know how deep these things run.
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly don't know how people can know about this stuff and be okay with it.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So I've just got a few more points here on my list. One of them was, I'm not sure that this would apply so much to you because you were homeschooled. But when you were growing up, did you feel like you were, like, special and part of the chosen to be saved at Armageddon?
Yeah, definitely. I remember thinking, like, I'm so lucky that I just so happened to be born into the one and only true religion. You're not realizing every religious person thinks the exact same thing. I really thought it was something special that I was born into, and I thought it was amazing.
And now that you've left or you're working your way out of the movement, do you still find yourself worrying about things that were instilled in you when you were a child?
Oh, definitely. Like whenever I hear, like, you know, stuff in the internationals getting worse, or like the coronavirus is getting worse, there's, oh, that first thought is always, oh my gosh, what if this is the last days? What if Armageddon is right around the corner? But what I, whenever I start thinking that way, and this is where meeting with other former Jehovah's Witnesses has really helped me. Whenever I start thinking that way, I have to take a step back and remember all the evidence points to Jehovah's Witnesses being wrong, right? And if God is loving and God exists, and he's not going to expect us to deny all the plain evidence in front of us that what this religion is teaching is wrong. And even if it is right, this is something I got from John Cedars. He's a YouTuber, and it really resonated with me. But he said, even if it is all right, even if Jehovah's Witnesses are 100% right, they're the true religion, you have to worship them to make it through Armageddon, why would I want to be in a paradise that billions of people have been murdered for me to be in? Every day I wake up in my, you know, wonderful house and just think, wow, how many people died for me to have this house? And I wouldn't want to be part of that anyway.
Yeah, that's a very, that's a different way of looking at it, but it's also quite a rational way, I think, of thinking about the promise that you're given as a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
So, is there any exclusive language that's used within the church that if I went to a congregation, it would just go straight over my head?
Oh, yeah, so much. So there's like terms like bad association or worldly people. So worldly people is anyone who's not a Jehovah's Witness. Bad association includes all worldly people, but can also include some Jehovah's Witnesses. There's, you know, somebody will say like, oh, they're part of the 144,000. That means, so they believe a small portion of people are going to heaven. That could be one of those people. I don't know how many examples you want me to give, but there's so much, it's almost its own language within Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right. Yeah. That's just that sometimes that's a common theme that can be linked back to cult behavior. So I just thought that that was an interesting point to look at. Now that you're working your way out of the religion, do you have any advice for other potential Jehovah's Witnesses that might be thinking about doing the same, or people that have managed to leave the movement?
Yeah, definitely. So the internet is an incredible resource. I don't know how people got out before it. You can find any book ever published by Jehovah's Witnesses online if you look. And you can find out what the other side of the story is. You can also connect with other former Jehovah's Witnesses. There's many communities online. And if anyone has doubts, I would just recommend anonymously reaching out to one of those communities and just talking to them, because they'll tell you why they left. People want to help other people. Jehovah's Witnesses have this idea that worldly people are scary and terrible and evil, and that just isn't true. People are just people. Some books I would recommend, Crisis of Conscience. It's written by Raymond Franz, a former governing body member. He left Jehovah's Witnesses and explains why in his book. Every single Jehovah's Witness on the planet should read that, because it's got some very valid criticisms. There's also Combating Cult Mind Control is another book I liked, which is more about cults in general. But if you read it, it could be written about Jehovah's Witnesses, even though it's not about them, which is crazy. And then I guess the last thing I'd want to say for anyone trying to get out Jehovah's Witnesses is they will try to attack your emotions. They'll try to make you feel bad, like you're hurting other people by doing this. And just remember, you can't control other people, and you got to do what's right for you.
Okay, that's all fantastic advice. The Combating Cult Mind Control book that you mentioned is written by Stephen Hassan.
Yeah.
And that's where I get the bite model from, which is the questions I sent to you originally before our email. So that's all really helpful. And there's also the XJW subreddit, which is full of resources and people with their survivor stories and people who are there to help you if you need advice or support. And there's the cult survivor subreddit as well, which I found really helpful in speaking to people and listening to their stories. So they're all great resources for anybody who's looking for extra support as well. Just one more question that I have. How do you think that the COVID outbreak has affected Jehovah's Witnesses who rely a lot on going door to door?
It's kind of weird because they really can't anymore, but I honestly think if anything, this is going to be a membership boost for them, because you know, they always say that like pestilences will come before Armageddon. And as vague as that is, they're going to use that along with coronavirus to like drive up their membership. So I honestly think it'll be a net gain for them.
Right. Right. Okay. And what will be your next steps now to fully distance yourself from the church?
I kind of mentioned I'm slowly trying to feed information towards my family. It is a matter of time until I am, you know, quote unquote caught and get kicked out. And then they'll be expected to shun me. I know that's coming, but I want to try to do what I can before that arrives. Even if they don't believe me, if I can get them to the point where they won't shun me, that'd be wonderful. I don't think it'll happen, but I need to try for myself. And then if at some point though, I'm just going to get sick of trying to live a double life. And I'm just going to tell them like, look, I don't believe in this anymore. This is why. And that's that. And then, I guess just try to move on with my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always the risk that if you do become disfellowshipped, your family are expected to cut off communication with you. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. So the way disfellowshipping works, it involves shunning. But it's, you're not supposed to have any contact at all. They do give like extreme important family emergencies that allow you to talk a little bit, but not very often. And everybody I know, not everybody, most of the people I know are Jehovah's Witnesses, because as a Jehovah's Witness, you're only supposed to be friends with other Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right. Yeah.
So, that'll be tough. I was going to say something now that I had written down here about disfellowshipping, and it just slipped my mind.
I mean, if it comes back to you, feel free to throw it in. I mean, hopefully you can manage to sustain or maintain some form of relationship with your family. Who knows? Maybe some of them have been feeling the same. I imagine that a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses have gained some cognitive dissonance during less face-to-face time with the congregation. At least we can hope for that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
So maybe, I mean, keep throwing feelers out there, and yeah. And hopefully you'll get a response and not just dead silence from, you know, from your family. That just adds another layer of difficulty and sadness on everything that you've been through and that your wife's been through. The potential to not have communication with your family must be, I know it's another cult control thing, but it must be hard for you to weigh up whether to try and stay or whether to leave altogether.
Yeah, that is, I've lost a lot of sleep thinking about this, because, and if you look on like the subreddit for former Jehovah's Witnesses, a lot of people will say, you know, they pretend, right, to keep access to their family. Mm-hmm. And I've gone back and forth on that. If I just want to spend time pretending, I live pretty far away from my family now, like 2 hours away. So that helps.
Right.
They don't know that I haven't been going to meetings, but the fact of the matter is I can't be untrue to myself.
And you want your family to love you for who you are as well.
Right.
And if you're not being yourself around them just to maintain that relationship, I mean, that's not really any form of true relationship anyway.
No, it's not. And as much as I love my family, and it's going to kill me if they choose to cut me out, I can't pretend to support an abusive organization.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I have gone through all of my questions. I didn't know if you had any other points to add.
I don't think so. I'm just scrolling back up through what I wrote down. No, I don't think so.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'm glad that you and your wife have gained your cognitive dissonance. I'm glad that you are slowly fading out from the religion. And I hope that you both continue your healing journey together and manage to make some more progress on making friends and socializing outside of Jehovah's Witnesses, going to the cinema, holding hands, going on dates, sharing your house with as many people, worldly people, as you want to, and just all of that good stuff that, you know, that the rest of us are experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time, Joe. I really do appreciate you talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This is the end of today's episode. If you'd like to get in touch, you can do so by emailing me at cultboltpodcast@gmail.com or find me on Twitter and Instagram @cultboltpod. I'm your speaker, Casey, and this has been The Cult Vault.